it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts.
And good morning, Sunday morning. Whether or not you are an art maker, an art breaker, an art faker, or an art partaker, welcome, because all are welcome, to Homegrown, a show about local arts. I'm the one they call Clinton, and I am here with the greatest co-host in the world, she who will soon be grooving on a Sunday afternoon, Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Well, good morning, Clinton. That was a lovely little introduction. I feel all warm and gooey now. That's lovely. Thank you.
That's good. You're welcome. It is so my pleasure to make you feel warm and gooey. I thought better of that as that was coming out, but I just said I'm rolling with
it. You said it anyway.
I'm rolling it.
That's awesome. So basically what we have to do is have a major snowstorm and miss a week of our show to get you to be this nice to me.
My goodness. I am taken aback. That was a little vacation that I did not expect to get.
I know, right?
And that I did not want. I didn't need a vacation.
Nobody needed
doing this show.
Nobody needed to shovel any of that crap, let me tell you, okay?
There was nothing artistic about that.
Nothing.
There was absolutely nothing.
Although perhaps. I will say I had a beautiful moment. After about halfway through the snowstorm, I step outside one morning to have, you know, my obligatory coffee and a cigarette in the morning. And I look across the way and my neighbor walks out of her back door with an umbrella and she's on her phone. And she says, loud enough for me to hear, "Hold on a second. I need to get this snow off this grill as we put these steaks on." I'm like,
it's winter in Virginia.
Like, you go. I love my people. Snow on the ground. She moving the snow off the grill so she can do her steaks. You go. You go. I love my people.
Excellent. Well, we should start this show the way we usually start our shows, just in case people have forgotten in the week off that we've had.
I know, right?
And that's with a parental advisory. For some people, you might want to know that at some point in the show, we may say the word concatenate. Concatenate. So, you know, if you've got precious little ones whose innocence that you want to preserve, you might want to usher them out of the room before they have to ask you about the word concatenate. You've been advised.
Well, that's a big word.
It's always the big ones that you have to worry about.
Right. Right. Well,
the FCC, they have it backwards. They keep going for
those small words.
Those little Anglo-Saxon short ones. But no, I say it's those long Latinate ones, maybe the ones with the Greek roots. Those are the ones that you got to look out for.
Well, you know, size matters. All right. Clinton, who is our first guest today?
Well, speaking of size, we've got somebody from the big leagues today. We are so pleased to have with us from Second Street Gallery, the director, Warren Craghead. Good morning, Warren.
Good morning.
Welcome to Homegrown, a show about local art. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Excellent. So, we're so excited to have you here because First Fridays is coming up.
Yeah, we've got an opening this Friday, just like every First Friday, of two artists who are going to have some great work in the gallery, Amy Oliver and Liz Rota.
Cool. So it's Liz Rota. I've been mispronouncing it for the last 2 weeks.
That's okay.
So can you talk about their work?
Yeah. So one of the things Second Street does is we bring contemporary art from around the world here to Charlottesville. We're a nonprofit space. And so we have a curator, Tasha Grantham, who goes all over the place looking for work. It's actually interesting because this show, the two artists came to us in different ways. So Amy Oliver is someone whose work, she's a Richmond-based artist. Her work, Tasha was aware of and visited her studio and sort of has planned this sort of show with her. Liz Rhoda is someone who...
Right, she, Amy Oliver, she used to work for, at VCU, or used to teach at VCU.
Yeah, she's right. Taught a bunch of places. She's shown all over the world. She's someone who's had a long and great career, and so we're really excited to have her work in our main space. We're going to have lots of her work there. Liz Rhoda is someone who came through our artist review panel, so she applied for the show, and just as a show, we just had a show come down with seven artists who did the same thing. They all applied. And it turned out to be a great show, just like Liz is going to be. It shows how many great artists there are out there that they come to us and we're able to sift through that, find how it fits with our curatorial program, and get it in the space. Our theme for this, Tasha's theme for this season is sustainability. And so as she's moved through the season, I tell her she's an artist herself because she composes the season as if one would compose a piece of art. And so,
wow, so she's a meta artist.
She really is. She's fantastic. She's also great at putting together a room of art. I've seen her take what looks like a big jumble of stuff. How is all this going to work together? For instance, our last show, seven different artists, all making very different things. By the time she put it together, it was a cohesive whole where there was a conversation between the objects and the items. It was fantastic, and that's going to happen again on Friday, so everyone should come see it.
And again, right, because from what I've seen of Second Street, you guys frequently have multiple shows going, or at least shared exhibits going on consistently, multiple artists doing exhibits in the same space. Is that an intentional, dedicated thing?
Yeah, well, we have a main space that's a big gallery. We're located in the CCA building, which is where everyone knows where Live Arts is. We're just downstairs from Live Arts. So we have a big main space, and then we have a Dovet Gallery, which is kind of our smaller or project space. A lot of times the two shows are divided between those spaces, but sometimes they bleed into each other and come out. This show, Amy Oliver will be in the main space, but then Liz Rhoda will have a video in the back space, and she'll also have some sculptures in the main space in conversation with Amy's work. So different shows call for different configurations about how that works, but it's great because we're able to set up those conversations between artists who don't know each other, have never met each other before. They will meet each other Friday. Amy will be here, and so will Liz, who's we're bringing her from Austin to come. So you get to meet her as well if you come to the opening on Friday.
So you mentioned that artists can submit to have their work showcased at the gallery. How does that process work?
Yeah, well, in the past, we've worked with what's called an artist review panel. People would submit their work, and the information's all on our website. And then we would have an artist review panel of local artists who would look at it and make recommendations. In the end, it's always been the curator's decision. Our curator at the time, sometimes it's been the director. Now we have a standalone curator who makes the decisions about the work, which I think is a really good way to work, because she's able to sort of take a step back and look both at our whole season, but also at the art world in general, and sort of make sure that we're reflecting some of the things going on in the wider world. It's one of the things that I feel like is really great about Second Street. We're sort of a first draft of art history. We're doing contemporary art by living artists who are making stuff sometimes the week before, which drives us crazy a little bit. But we're the judgment of history hasn't been on this work yet. You get to come in and make decisions about it.
And be the first ones, yeah.
Yeah, and so sometimes people feel intimidated, and I think we're not intimidated about music or about the clothes we wear. We make these aesthetic decisions, and one should, you should feel that same way about visual art. Don't let anyone at any museum or gallery make you feel like you're too uninformed to make a decision. You can go in and say, I like this or I don't like it.
We have had this conversation with a lot of visual artists on the show about how people perceive their art and how people are tentative about commenting on it, because they feel like because it's presented on a wall with lights on it, and it can be very intimidating and makes the viewer feel like they're not intelligent enough make a comment about it.
Yeah, but I can make a comment about music I like. I don't know anything about music theory or the history of music, but I know what I like to listen to. And then if I learn more, I'll make a more informed decision, like you can about art.
See, but that's where I come in, whereas I've had experiences where I have looked at something and it hasn't registered. And then I will talk to somebody who knows something, specifically thinking about older pieces of art, more classic pieces of art. I look at something and said, okay, well, that's a painting. That's what that is. And then somebody will come along and says, okay, well, here is the history behind it. Here's what this person was reacting to. Here's what this person's trying to do here. You know, here's what's going on that you didn't see before. Here are the things that you can see. And suddenly it's opened up a piece to me.
Yeah.
And so I'm very, I get that, and I certainly want to respect the idea that you don't want people to self-edit, to check themselves out before they even have a chance to try to engage something.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I'm very aware of what I do not know.
Yeah.
And well, open to learning.
Yeah, and we work hard to have materials there that present the work in context. We're always there to talk to and to give tours around the gallery and talk about. There was a piece we had in the last show by a local artist, Jason Robinson, where he went to the wastewater treatment plant, took a bunch of video footage, then went back and processed it into the 60-minute lyrical video. If you just saw the video and walked in, it's beautiful and actually really engaging. A lot of people sat there for 16 minutes and watched it, which is a long time for an abstract video. But when you find out where he got the footage from, it does add another whole layer to that. I should back up and say we have a different method for getting artists now.
Okay.
We have a biennial coming up in about a year and a half. So we have an outside curator who's going to come in. So now if you sent in your work now, it will be reviewed by this outside curator who then is going to put together a show of artists. We're doing things a little bit differently to see how this works. But I think we're still engaged with trying to both go out and find work that fits with what we're trying to do and be open to people sending us stuff so that we can find things we never would have thought of, which has led to a lot of great artists showing in the gallery.
So you just started at Second Street, right?
It's only 4.5 months, but it feels like a lot longer. I mean, I've been in Charlottesville since 2003. I'm an artist. I've shown there. I've curated there. I've been on the board. So I've been around the gallery. But yes, I started as director about 4.5 months ago and joined a great team with, like I said, our curator, our assistant director, our gallery coordinator. We've got a great whole team there to make sure that we stay strong and keep going.
So what's the difference that you've seen in being an artist that's shown there and had work there and all of that to now being the propagator of all of that?
The wizard behind the curtain, as it
were. Well,
yes.
Well, I don't know if I'm the real wizard. The real work gets done by my staff. I'm just the figurehead. But I think I see a lot more now all the things that go into putting a show. I mean, as an artist, I knew part of it. Then as a curator, I saw the sort of that side, all that work that went into it. Now I see what it takes to do things like get donations, pay bills, write grants, make sure that the taxes are paid, you know, all this sort of nuts and bolts things that go into running any institution, but especially a small nonprofit where we each have to wear a lot of different hats.
Right.
Again, if they're really lucky, I've got a great people working with me that can help me do this stuff because it's a lot and it's important too. I mean, we want to make sure that we've been around for 42 years and we may be the oldest. I'm not totally sure, but if not, we're the second oldest nonprofit contemporary art space in the country.
Wow, 40! So, I hadn't realized that.
Yeah,
Second Street Gallery has been going for 42 years.
Yeah, this is our third location, and they've all been on Second Street. There's a couple Second Streets downtown. So,
that's right. Fortunately,
right.
There are
yeah,
a couple
so
that you helps. Can work with.
But we've been around for 42 years. It was started by artists, and we're continue to be dedicated both to our audience, which is hopefully everyone listening to this show, but also to the artists that show there. We make sure that we take care of them in a professional way. We do a lot to try to make them showing with us a great experience, both from a resource point of view, but also to get them out into the community, to get them. Sometimes we have them do outreach projects with. We do a lot of outreach projects with the city schools, with the Boys and Girls Clubs. To bring these arts and artists and creative thinkers out into our community as well. So
cool.
Hi, I'm Russell Richards, and you're listening to Homegrown on WPVC.
All right. 14 minutes after the hour, you're listening to 94.7, of course, WPVC. And if you're just tuning in to Homegrown, we're here with Warren Craighead, the director of Second Street Gallery. So talking about these two shows that are coming up, Amy Oliver. Oh, and I should say, talking about shows coming up. Oh, my goodness. I must let that go. So stay tuned. Of course, after our lovely show. It's an even lovelier show. It's the very famous Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Rick Moore. And today he's talking to Greg Buppert and Will Cleveland with the Southern Environmental Law Center. Oh, coal ash getting poured into the James, pipelines going through parklands.
What is that about? If you
stay tuned, you can hear exactly what that's about. Coming up after this show at 11 o'clock Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, and of course at 4 o'clock, it's Club del Sabor cum DJ Nitro El Mesenario. Charlottesville's only locally produced Spanish language show featuring the sounds of America Latina. Back to Warren Craighead. So, you've got these two shows coming up. Let's talk about them specifically. Amy's stuff, Amy Oliver's show, it's called Maps, Planes, and Watermarks. What can we expect from the show? What media is she working? Is that the correct term? What media is she working in?
So Amy's work is, she works with water-based inks on water-resistant paper, which sounds crazy, but what it ends up with is...
Wait, what?
She doesn't say this, but I get the feeling it's a battle that goes on these pages, on this paper that makes for a very lyrical and beautiful abstractions, highly colorful. She sometimes etches in or scrapes in images of ladders or houses. But in the end, her work has this like ethereal, beautiful quality, this flowing quality that is really an exploration of the materials. And we're going to have lots of her work on paper up, all over the inside of the gallery. I think it's going to be a really beautiful and I think really visually interesting setup. It's something I'm really excited to experience.
That sounds fascinating. So she's actually scraping into.
Yeah.
So it's not just an exploration of color or shape. There's also going to be an element of texture to it as well.
Yeah. And I think that what you'll see is, over and over, someone fighting with materials, interested in how they work together. We're going to have big scale works, small scale works. I mean, she's a pro. She's had shows all over the place. So I'm really excited about how she's going to fill up our gallery.
Cool. And Liz Rota, her show, Two Kinds of Luck.
Yeah. So Liz is from a completely, I'm not going to say opposite, but different pole of the art world. She's a much more conceptual artist, one who the materials she works with is based on the ideas that she has, as opposed to the materials being the things that she's exploring. I think of her as kind of a mad scientist, where she does these kooky science experiments. She said this in one of her artist statements, where she takes different pieces of things, puts them together to try to reveal hidden connections in the world, to find... Some they're humorous, but they also have a profundity to them. So, for instance, one piece we're going to have, it's on our card, it's on our website, that we have, is called The Vow. It's a bright green yoga mat that's folded up on one end, and there's a chunk of plaster on it. And that plaster is infused with Elizabeth Taylor passion perfume, which to me is, it's almost like a cartoon come to life. And yet at the same time, when I really think about it, there's ideas about femininity, about us preparing ourselves for the world, the futility and utility of that. And I think that she has a very fine-honed sense of humor that at the same time can really dig deep into things. We're going to have a great video of hers called Death Drive that is a two-channel video. On one side, you're going to see a dash cam of someone driving through the Grand Canyon. On the other side, there's a video of a car that's stuck in reverse with the wheel locked with nobody in it, so it's spinning backwards out of control in a parking lot, and all these police officers are coming trying to stop it. You know, there's fire trucks. And again, it's fast. I've watched it. It's fascinating to watch. And when you see this, like, oh yeah, so on one side I'm getting from point A to point B and it's beautiful. On the other side, well, aren't we really just going in circles all the time? And yet it's hilarious because it is really humorous to watch. I mean, no one's getting hurt, so it's funny.
Right.
I think she has, again, I'm really excited to have her work in conversation with Amy's work in the gallery.
See, but this is also part of what I'm talking about. This is great. So even here, you've got two different ways of approaching art and two different ways of approaching visual art. And that's really cool to know that on one plane, you can have somebody who is, as you could say, engaged in the material and really interested in seeing I don't know how to say it, but seeing like how the materials work together and really looking at it at that level. And then, but you just have somebody who approaches it, as you say, from a conceptual point of view. And there are thematic elements that you're taking.
And I think, and Amy's work too, it has a sort of some deeper resonances with how the world works and how one experiences and the world oneself. I think you're right on the money that there are many different ways of approaching how to make work and how one can, you know, plan something out and execute that plan like a Renaissance painter would do, or to just go with what the material tells you to do and find what you find. And all these things are valid. I think all of these things we had a group of art students come through the gallery last week, and as part of the tour, I talked about the different ways all the different artists approached making their work. And these were, I said, you baby artists, you know, you got to find your way and not feel like you need to go one way or the other. And so I think it's great to have those two sort of sides together in this show.
Awesome, awesome, Warren. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot. This is great. Everyone, come Friday, I'll say before you prompt me.
Excellent.
Friday, 5:30 to 7:30, Second Street Gallery. We're downtown across from the Water Street Garage in the same building as Live Arts. Free admission. There'll be wine and snacks. And come down and see the show. We're also open Tuesday through Saturday, 11 to 6. And please come by and see the show. Let us know what you think. If you hate it, if you love it, you're going to love it. So come down.
Amy Oliver's Maps, Planes, and Watermarks. Liz Rhode is Two Kinds of Luck. Warren Craig, Second Street Gallery, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
I think so. Hey, Leslie, I think it's time to look into the future. And time to talk about some of the things that are coming up in this lovely, lovely, lovely town of ours. Currently running from now till April 3rd at the American Shakespeare Center. We're talking about the Actors Renaissance season. It's Shakespeare's The Tempest and Measure for Measure, along with Middleton's Women Beware Women, Fletcher and Massinger's The Sea Voyage, and William Congreve's Love for Love. Also currently running from now until February 7th, Pride and Prejudice at our friends Guerrilla Theater. It was supposed to end this week, but it got snowed out last weekend, so it's been, lucky for us, extended 1 week due to last weekend's blizzard. Go down to Allied Street, see Pride and Prejudice at our wonderful, wonderful friends at the Guerrilla Theater. From February 5th to February 7th, it's Songs in the Cellar, Broadway by the Decades, and the decade at Four County Players, and the decade that they're going by is the 1990s. So go see that. That's for 1 weekend only, February 5th to February 7th. Songs in the Cellar at Four County Players. Don't miss that. Also, February 5th is the Story Slam at the Jefferson School American Heritage Center. Open mic night, spoken word open mic night. Don't miss that. And also in terms of not missing, February 5th to the 27th, The Other Place opens at Live Arts, a play about Alzheimer's. February 6th at 11 a.m., it's Meet the Author at the Central Branch of the JMRL, Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Sadiq Ali talking about his book, Benjamin E. May's Institute, Educating Young Black Males, talking about making a school that dealt with an all-male school dealing with all black students. Should be interesting. Part of their celebration of Black History Month at the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. February 6th and 7th, the Charlottesville Ballet's 4th Annual Father-Daughter Dance at the Charlottesville Ballet Academy. They're going to have special games, activities, and dancing. Tickets and info at the Seaville Ballet box office at, here's the phone number, 434-227-7592. And February 12th, it's our other friends, Bent Theater, Charlottesville Improv, performing at Guerrilla Theater. Bent Theater at Guerrilla Theater, two great tastes that taste great together. Check them out. Two films coming up at the library. February 13th, Love Between the Covers, a documentary about romance writing, presented to you by the Virginia Romance Writers and the JMRL. That's at 2 o'clock. And Next day at 2 o'clock on February 14th, Jack et la Mécanique du Coeur, that is, Jack and the Cuckoo Clock Heart, presented by JMRL and the UVA French Film Festival. And here's just some of the music that you can see tonight. Travis Elliott at Rapture, February 3rd, Bill Williamson at Fellini's, February 4th, it's Help Me Helen's CD release party with Justin Jones and John Kelly at the Anteroom. February 4th, also, it's Blues Night at the Tin Whistle. February 9th, our man Brady Earnhardt comes back for Uncovered. Had to cancel last month, but he's here again now. It's the singer-songwriter open mic at Escafé. February 9th, my man Matty Metcalf at the Tin Whistle Pub at 6 p.m. And then to do this double shot, also February 9th at 8 p.m. at the Tin Whistle, Jolie Fille, if you want to get your Cajun punk on. And why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you, really? Of course, every Monday, it's the singer-songwriter night at the local. Every Wednesday, Jim Wave at the Blue Moon Diner. Also every Wednesday, it's the Mike Krasinski and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Every Thursday, the Woolen Writers Revival, hosted by William Thomas Reed and Brian Craddock at Firefly. And of course, every Thursday at Miller's, it's the John Dearth Quintet, because every once in a while, you just gotta come down to Dearth. If you are an artist and have an event that you want us to talk about, get in contact with us at our Facebook page, facebook.com/homegrownWPVC, or email it to us, homegrown947@gmail.com. And that is just some of the wonderful art that you can see in our wonderfully artistic town.
That was a really long list, Clinton. You've been, that was a lot of talking. You all right?
I'm fine.
You're good?
I'm well.
But, and I love when you speak other languages.
Do you?
You know how that I'm warm and gooey again.
Really?
That's like, I mean, ooh, you're speaking French? Oh my God.
You know, you've said that about Spanish. I didn't realize that it was all other languages.
You do it so well. I get little goosebumps. It's so great.
Should I warm up on my Hmong? Is that...
Yes.
Maybe work on my Swahili.
Oh, yes, please.
Yes, please.
That'd be awesome. You know, a little Vietnamese in there, maybe, you know. So, ooh, Russian. That's what you should do. Russian.
Really?
Yes.
Really. Why don't I just work on my Mandarin? Just pick an easy language. Why don't you?
You know, whatever. You can take online classes for Russian. That's easy, right? Come on. It's for me.
That would make it all worthwhile.
Exactly.
27 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, a show about local art. And we're here with our next guest here on Homegrown, Hamid Karimi from Barbersville Fine Arts. How are you, Hamid?
Thank you very much.
Good. Let me get the mic closer to you.
Thank you very much. I'm doing really well.
Great. Nice to see you. And Hamid is here. You've got two other people with you. Would you like to introduce them?
Yes, I have Chief Longo from Charlottesville Police and Mary Miller, the representative from VSA.
Excellent.
Here at the studio.
Excellent. And so tell our listeners why you from Barbersville Fine Arts have a representative from the local police force and a representative from, what was it again? VSA.
From VSA.
From VSA, sorry. That's about right. That. From VSA here in our lovely tiny studio.
Well, I had an idea a little while back, and my idea was about how art can be used to make a contribution to the community. And I know that Charlottesville Police has been doing a phenomenal job for our local community. And I thought, could we as artists be able to donate some of our work that can be auctioned off to raise money for the police's community relationship building? So that was the initial idea. And this venture has been a great joint effort. We have had so many artists and so many volunteers involved. And Mary Miller is representing the VSA, which is an organization for the disabled artists. And she has been very instrumental in trying to recruit artists that are interested to donate their work that can be, you know, put up on display and auctioned off to raise money for the Charlottesville Police Foundation. All proceeds go to the Police Foundation. The event is going to be on February 5th from 5 to 7:30 in the evening. So it's the first Friday event on Downtown Mall, and we're going to have that in the Paramount Theater, which has very generously been giving us their venue for this show. And we also
have
Trader Joe's.
That's nice. I didn't know that.
Sure.
So it's down, because I assumed it was up in Barbersville.
No, we had many different options. But we thought that since this is for the Charlottesville Police Foundation, then it might be anywhere in Charlottesville might be better to have as a venue. And also, because we are doing it as part of the First Friday art events in Charlottesville, then it's just easier for people to go, you know, when you're walking on Downtown Mall, that they can come in to the Paramount Theater and perhaps bid on a piece of art.
Cool. Mary, do you want to step in and talk a little bit about what VSA's role in this is?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. Hamid and I know each other from VSA because he's a volunteer with us. But he and I were sitting one day, and he had this great idea. So,
and tell us what VSA stands for.
VSA, in the old days, used to stand for Very Special Arts. Now it stands for an organization that helps everyone in the community find art, and we try to help educate people. We have a special focus on people with disabilities, but it's for everybody. So in this show, we have several talented artists that are well-known in the community, including John Triple, whose work is in great demand. We have Justin Connor, who's an excellent young photographer, who's also very, very tall, which is really, really good. We have Joan Bullard, who's a photographer. We have Norm Carter, who's the dad of a young man with a disability. We have a good friend of mine, Jane Goodman, who is not a VSA artist. She's a regular artist, and she has the Yellow Cardinal Gallery. And we have Chris Warham, who's from Barbersville, but he, Barbersville Gallery, he's showing. Is he currently showing?
He is.
Yeah, he's currently showing. But he's also well-known in our community. He has gigantic art, although for this show it might be, did he donate smaller art? Hamid's shaking his head. I haven't seen what he donated, but most of his work, which I have done photography for him for his catalog, is huge, enormous. And it's also very soulful. He's very deep.
I'm actually currently waiting to hear from Chris with confirmation as to what kind of pieces of art, if any, he would like to donate. But he has been on the list as one of the artists that might contribute to this event.
That's wonderful. That's a lot of artists that are joining in. That's a lot of support. So how did you originally approach these artists with this idea? I mean, how did you, I mean, it's not a normal thing that an artist would donate work to. So how did you pose that question to them?
Well, first we had a meeting at Barbersville Fine Arts with exhibiting artists at the gallery in Barbersville. We had a meeting, and our discussion was about, on one hand, the good work that Charlottesville Police has done, and on the other hand, we discussed how can we make art something bigger, something more than just a piece of beautiful painting that you want to put on your wall, but something that can actually add value to the community.
Right.
So we were looking for opportunities to use that art to generate financial resources for local charities. And Charlottesville Police came up as one of the organizations that would deserve the money that we are raising.
Right.
So I had that meeting. Then I met Mary Miller, and I raised the idea with her as well. And she was immediately very encouraged about that and helped me to contact Chief Longo. And Chief Longo has been very, very supportive throughout the whole process. I had a meeting with Chief Longo, and he was immediately in favor of it, and he just loved the idea. And then it passed a couple of months that, you know, I had to go back to the drawing board and try to, you know, make all the planning. And then I met Chief Longo and the chief executive of Charlottesville Police Foundation, Mindy Goodall, to talk about this again. And they were very supportive again, and Chief Longo had an idea about using Paramount Theater as the venue for this event, and Paramount Theater is perhaps the most lucrative venue for such an auction. So we were all in favor of it, and that's how it all happened, and we took it from there.
This is so fascinating for me, because we have thought about, and we've talked about on the show, about art having art in its, we've talked about a lot of things about art, but we've talked about art and its role in the community. Art is something that helps shape a community, and also art is something that helps express a community's values. But I don't think we've ever seen art doing those things in such a direct way before. That's really, really interesting. Chief, in your time, have you ever had such an interface with art? And
absolutely not. But you know, it as I'm listening to you all speak about this, art is really a vehicle, right?
Yes.
It's a vehicle by which
indeed.
You can reach people in so many different ways on so many different levels. And so when Mary approached me in the frozen food section of the Giant food store several months ago, and she says, "We have this idea." Honestly, I kind of thought what was interesting, but I hadn't really thought about it much until we sat down and really started talking it through. And in a point in time in our nation's history where there's so much stress between police and the community, what a great tool to use to bring people together in one place, and then take the proceeds from that endeavor and reinvest it back into an organization like the Police Foundation, which is really all about increasing the value of police community relationships in Charlottesville. So this is a concept that perhaps will, expand across our globe.
So what exactly does the Police Foundation do with the funds that, like, how does it get redistributed back into the community?
Yeah, sure. First of all, the Police Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that was started about a decade ago. A guy by the name of Randy Castleman, who's a local business person, came to me and said, "I want to do something for the police department, but most importantly for the community." And from that, the foundation came about. And a lot of what they do is they fund things that are either outside the city's ability to fund, or things that might come up during the course of a budget cycle. For example, we want to teach police officers how to more effectively communicate with our citizens. They bring that training to Charlottesville, and it doesn't cost the police department a dime, and some of the best training in the country. Strategies for Youth Training is training that others have funded, local grants, statewide grants, for example, but is also something in the kinds of things that the Police Foundation looks to fund because it does have such a direct benefit to the community and to the police officers. They've sent several of our command staff members to command colleges around the country to better prepare them for the next generation of policing. They've funded sending one of our forensic technicians to the National Forensic College in Tennessee to better enhance his knowledge, skills, and abilities in the area of forensic science. And they also host what's called Cops for Kids in May, which several hundred children come to the Boys and Girls Club on a Friday afternoon, and they interact with 12 to 15, as many as 20 police officers in a very fun way. So the foundation does a lot for this community and a lot to connect police officers with the community. One of the other, and I'll give this as a last example, then I'll stop and yield to your next question. But one of the things they did several years ago was they developed a housing fund for police officers to be able to access money to either live in the city of Charlottesville where they work, or within the urban ring, which is that 2-mile radius around the city. And they've probably given $9,000 or $10,000, $20,000 grants to police officers to purchase homes in our community. And the only the caveat is that you remain with the police department for at least 5 years and that you stay on the property for at least 5 years. And it's allowed police officers to actually purchase homes here in our city and within the urban ring so that they have more of a connection with the community that they serve.
So with something like this, bringing art into the mix, you're raising money to continue this good work, that which is awesome. I mean, that's a really impressive list of things. So what exactly are you trying to, like, I've lived in and around Charlottesville most of my life. And thankfully never, you know, had too much to do with the police. But
I thought I recognized you. Somebody. I can't put
Darn.
My finger on it, but
I
I'll
thought
come
the sunglasses
me.
Would hide me.
I told you to do the sunglasses with the mustache.
I know. But I think a lot of people may not know, like, what is the relationship between the police and the citizens now? Like, you know, is this a critical problem, or is this something that we, you know, you notice, so you want to make it better? Like, how, where are we on the, doomsday clock?
Unfortunately, my profession specifically, but this could be any profession really, we are impacted by what happens on a national stage. So what happens 1,700 miles from here has a direct influence on the way people look at this profession. And
yes.
You're naive if you don't realize that.
Yeah.
So police community relations is something that should be the forefront of every police chief, police commissioner, police superintendent's mind as he and she move forward to make this profession better for their community. And I've told police officers many times that every contact with a citizen matters. It frames the way people will look at you as an individual, but more importantly, the way they'll look at the profession that we serve. And so we're consistently reinforcing the importance of relationship with people. And this, again, is another vehicle by which to reach individuals that may not otherwise reach out to us. There are
right.
lots of people in this community that don't interact with the police. They benefit from the services we provide, sometimes unknowingly, but they have no interaction because there's no touching point.
Right.
This is a touching point.
Well, and I will say about a month and a half ago, I had a little incident before the show.
That's where it was.
My car. No,
now it's coming
now
back
it comes
to
out.
Me.
No.
Jeez, go ahead.
My
you have
car
a right
broke
to remain
down.
Silent. Anything you
my
said.
Car broke down right in the parking lot out here and broke to a point where there was no way I was moving it off the road. Like, and you know, 20 minutes before I have to be on the air, and I'm freaking out, have no idea what to do next. And one of your officers who was off duty was coming from Burger King and came around the corner and stopped and got out. And he's like, do you need any help? What can I do? And he not only stayed with my car while I walked around the corner to see if the university tire was open. When it was closed, I came back. He picked up his own phone, called a tow truck. And then because it was 6 minutes until I had to be on the air, I handed him my information to give to the tow truck driver, and he stayed with my car and made sure it got to where it needed to be towed to.
Wow.
You know, and seriously, I was like, that was amazing. Like that in that small moment, that was a lifesaver for
yeah.
me, you know, and how awesome that on his off hour in the middle of his Sunday morning, he stopped and spent 45 minutes helping someone that needed it. I mean, that was awesome.
Yeah, somebody they didn't even know. Well, I call that relational policing. And, you know, how many times will you tell that story in a lifetime? Right?
I've told it several times. Yeah, because it was great. It was absolutely awesome
you.
That he cared enough to do that. And it was great.
Thank you very much.
Cool. So, Hamid. So, or should I say, because Mary, you look like you've got something that you've been wanting to say for a while. And
I think, Hamid, you asked a question. Has it been hard to get artists to donate to this auction a little while ago? And we got a really good response. But I've asked a lot of people, and I have to say that once I said it was for police community policing, they all said, sure, we have a great police department here in Charlottesville. So it wasn't a hard sell at all. And think about it. When somebody puts a piece of their work in an auction, it's very personal and it's a hard decision, but everybody was just like right on board and they all applaud the work that's done in our city. Anyway, that's what I wanted to say.
Right. All right, 43 minutes past the hour. And you're listening. Do we want to play our little thing? We should play our little thing.
Hello, this is Brian Weimer of the Ix Art Park, and you're listening to Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC.
That never gets old for me.
It really doesn't. That's so. I just love it. Like between him and Michael Clem and Russell, like I'm just. I'm. This is a warm and gooey day. That's what this is. That's what.
That's because the temperature's so high.
That must
Once
be
the
it.
Snow melts, you don't have to worry about that.
Right. And I'll go back to my cold, cold-hearted ways. Right.
Indeed. Indeed. So 44 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Homegrown, a show about local art on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stay tuned after this for the Sunday morning wake-up call with Rick Moore. He'll be talking with his guests, Greg Buppert and Will Cleveland from the Southern Environmental Law Center. You want to catch that one. And, of course, stay tuned later on till 4 o'clock where we get Club del Sabor con DJ Nitro, el programa de radio única producida localmente en español en Charlottesville con la música de America Latina. All right.
I want to dance already. So, Ahmed, so is this going to be an ongoing thing that Barbersville's does? Because, I mean, it seems like it's got great support, that artists are willing to be involved, you know, donating their stuff for good work in the community. So is this something that you're now going to continue and spread to other nonprofits in the area?
Absolutely. We are hoping to make this an annual event. Barbersville Fine Arts has done several fundraiser events before as well. And we did that in Barbersville. Now we are doing this in Charlottesville, and we are hoping that this is the start, the first time we are doing it, and that over time we can do many more of that. We were just talking about this outside the studio, that we might change the timing, maybe doing it closer to the summertime when it's nice and beautiful so people can actually walk on downtown mall and just pop into Paramount Theater or even have stands outside and auction of art. So we can change the format. We're trying this now, and this is our trial. See what happens. And if we get very good feedback, which so far the feedback has been phenomenal, then we can build on that and do many more, hopefully an annual event for
the Charlotte
show.
I love the fact that conversation started in our studio. That's great.
Right.
So can you talk about what type of art that you're getting? I mean, are you getting, what type of media are you getting? Are you getting paintings or sculptures? Is there more of one than another? Are you getting different things? And also, the type of artists that you are encountering, are you getting like artists of color? I mean, how much variety are we seeing here?
Well, we have been trying to get a good variety of artists. So I'm very thankful that we have the VSA artists, because that's an organization that is mobilizing the people with some level of disability. And I'm so proud.
Can I just say, between you guys, the VSA, and the Police Foundation, this just seems like this all lined up really well.
Exactly. And that was the whole idea. We want to bring in artists from any type of background. And I also have to say that
I'm sorry, I cut you off. Variety. You were talking about variety.
Yes. I was talking about the variety. You were asking about the medium as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What kind of medium? Well, we don't really have any specific requirement as long as it's local art. So we have had people that.
Like our show.
That's right. Exactly. That's like our show. People like, for example, Mac Rowe, he does a lot of beautiful watercolors, and he's been donating several, in fact, of his pieces. I believe it's 4 or 5.
Ooh, watercolor.
Watercolor, yeah. And it's a really hard medium. I personally do oil and acrylic, and I'm going to put some of my paintings. We have other people, like Richard Young is a very well-known local artist. John Triple as well. He's got several pieces that are all oil paintings. We also had one gentleman who contacted me yesterday, Todd Starbuck, and he is doing sculpture. And I looked at his sculptures, and they are so beautiful. We have so many paintings, and I really wanted to have something 3D in this show. So I include some of his work as well. He does mainly like heads that are colored in very unique way. So he's going to put some of his work up there. There had been Terry Fitzhugh. He is doing really interesting abstract artwork based on drawings. And he's, by the way, one of our very important volunteers as well. And he's going to be the curator for the whole show.
Oh, nice.
Going to have his stuff out there as well. So there has been a very broad-based and very diverse group of artists that are joining this cause.
So you said you got a call yesterday with someone wanting to add something. So when is your cutoff? Like, can people still donate?
We take donations and contributions anytime. We're not going to turn down. So hopefully after this talk show, we're going to get more calls. And we are open up to, you know, any kind of art. As long as, you know, it's something that, you know, it comes from the artist's heart and they want to donate it and it's local art, we welcome that.
That's where, okay, you guys heard it here first, because if you're listening to Homegrown, then you know that they will be taking submissions up until opening. So if you've got something, get it down there, put it in the show. It's for a good cause. Thank you guys so much for spending your time with us this morning and talking about this really wonderful event. And I hope that this is the first annual and it keeps going. It's really great.
Thank you.
50 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Homegrown, a show about local art on 94.7 WPVC. We've just got a few more minutes in our episode this week. Stay tuned afterwards. It's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with Rick Moore. And, of course, at 4 o'clock, Club Del Sabor con DJ Nitro. I think that we have come to the point of the show that I'm sure many people consider to be the point of the show. That high point, that apex, the Matterhorn, you might want to say, of Charlottesville radio. Leslie's weekly rant.
Oh, wow. You're good with introductions today, Clinton. Thank you.
All my exes can tell you I'm very good with introductions, but not so good at leaving.
Oh, okay. I think that was more information I needed to know about your love life, but okay, thank you. All right. This week, I need to pose a question to my fellow artists. When trying to solve the question of diversity, when is it okay to say, no, you can't do that and call yourself a human being? For hundreds of years, the whitewashing of anything remotely Afrocentric has been accepted. The enslaved people brought from Africa were the ones who literally built this country. Today, we are the ones looked to for entertainment, sexual satisfaction, and curiosity, while the theft of the products of our mind and imagination goes unchecked. It's a fact. America loves our culture, not us. So, how does this apply to art? Let me explain. No, that is too much. Let me sum up. Joseph Fiennes was just cast in a television show as Michael Jackson. Y'all ain't hear me. Joseph Fiennes has been cast as Michael Jackson. Maybe y'all don't understand. This actor is most famous for playing the title role in a movie, Shakespeare in Love, which was a horrid movie, by the way, has been cast to portray the King of Pop. Now, I'm going to set aside the very Cosby-esque feelings I have about Michael and talk about the art. I have no problem with playing with race during the casting process. As directors, we've all done it. The female odd couple, the all-black Steel Magnolias. You know, I'm about to cast for Antony and Cleopatra in 2 months, and I'm looking for who I can cast as an actor of color. But I'm basing that decision on the historical ethnicity of the people involved. I'm making inferences from descriptions of them. And it may be that in the end, I choose to change the race of someone if it forwards my vision of the story. That being said, white people would go absolutely bat you know what crazy if someone decided to do a TV show about David Bowie and cast Idris Elba in the title role. People would pick at the studio. Backers would pull funding. That show would be dead before the day was done, and Idris would be out of another job that he didn't want in the first place. And guess what? casting Michael Jackson as a white man is the same thing. Sure, it's a nice publicity stunt. It gets everybody talking about your project, sure. But if you have to pull those kinds of antics to get people interested, maybe you should spend a little more time worrying about the work and if it's worth being made. And the only thing I'll say about Joseph's flippant and disrespectful response referencing the similarity in skin pigmentation between MJ and himself is, I can't believe you thought that was funny. Wrong moment for a joke, okay? Whether I agree with the idolization of MJ or not, he is one of the black community's icons. And frankly, if Idris Elba can't play Bond because he's too street, then Joseph Fiennes can't play Michael because he's too Caucasian. And that's the weekly rant.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Fiennes?
Yes.
Joseph Fiennes?
Please tell me you are not disagreeing with me on this. Please, please tell me you are not disagreeing with me on this.
White man said what?
Fiennes?
Joseph,
Right?
I do not care.
Uh-huh.
How much he straightened the hair. I do not care how much he peeled the skin. I do not care how much he hung about with white people. I just did. You do not get to decide that he is not black. We do.
Right?
Joseph Fiennes?
I'm telling you. And did you see his remark when somebody asked him what he thought about the uproar of him getting cast? His response was, well, you know, by the end, we were the same color. That was his response. That was his response. I was like, you know what? I want to jump through my computer right now and strangle you. Like, that is not okay. Like, it would be one thing if you were an ultra fan of MJ and you wanted to play this part because, you know, he was like an idol to you and you wanted to do some sort of justice to his memory. Like, that would be one thing. But you do not get to just degrade and demean the fact that you have been cast as this person by making a joke about their skin color. Like, what the, how do you?
What I want to know is, like, is there anyone who is not asleep at the wheel in the Joseph Fiennes camp? Even if Fiennes himself is completely oblivious.
Right. Like, what is his publicist doing right now? His publicist is pulling their hair out right now.
Wasn't there an agent? Wasn't there somebody there to say, Joe?
I don't know.
I just want to point out, he's got six brothers. Six who are all still alive. And many of whom are deep with the black Muslims.
Right.
I mean, just like...
Not to mention those couple sisters that are crazy.
Fruit of Islam knocking on your door. This definitely isn't the Spike Lee version of Michael Jackson story.
No, it is not. Well, let me just tell you. Here's the other crazy thing. This TV show, okay, the plot, which is absolutely ridiculous, it's supposed to be a like dark comedy, and and it's being produced by the BBC. Another, oh my god. The story is Michael Jackson, Elizabeth Taylor, and Marlon Brando in a car escaping from New York after 9/11. And it's the story of these three people in a car together while they drive from New York to Pennsylvania after 9/11. This is the premise of this story. And guess who's playing Elizabeth Taylor? Stockard Channing.
Not Beyonce?
Right? Like, what? I don't... Like, the premise of this thing is so, like, off-the-wall crazy and stupid, and then to cast him, and I'm just...
I have to agree with you! That's how horrible this... Oh, man, just, I can't believe everything is bad enough that you just keep thinking...
All right. Well, you know what? You know what? I am so happy... right now, because finally, a weekly rant, Clinton wasn't mad at me. He actually agreed with me. Y'all heard it here first. It's actually possible. All right. We have had a wonderful show today. We want to thank our guests, Warren Craighead from the Second Street Gallery and Hamid Karimi from Barboursville Fine Arts. You guys go see the show at Second Street this Friday, and stop by the Paramount and bid on some local art to benefit the local police charity. I mean, that's two great things going on Friday, and I hope you tune in to them. We've had a wonderful time today talking to you, and we will see you guys next week.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.